finding no other viable alternatives, this court hereby orders that Roy S. Moore be removed from his position of Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Alabama.
That was William Thompson. He's presiding judge of the Alabama Supreme Court, announcing on Thursday the removal of Alabama Supreme Court Justice Roy Moore. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. It was back on July 31st, 2001. It might have even bled over into the early hours of August 1st, 2001, that Judge Roy Moore had brought into the rotunda of the Alabama Judicial Building a monument weighing over 5,000 pounds. At the top of this monument, a depiction of an open book. On the pages of that open book, the Ten Commandments, according to the King James Bible. There are other quotations on the monument out around the side. Well, we've been watching the story unfold, haven't we? The monument was ordered removed. The judge refused. Eventually, it was removed. The judge was suspended and on Thursday was himself removed. We're going to carry this story on during this hour of Issues, Etc., and talk about the removal of Judge Roy Moore. Is he a martyr? Is he a renegade judge? What is the real issue in this whole story as it continues to unfold? We're going to be talking about that during this hour. Now, Issues, Etc. is a live call-in program. We're coming to you live this Sunday evening, November the 16th. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. If you'd like, you can also post a question or a comment on our Issues Etc. forum. You get there by going to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section, and there you'll find the place to post your question or comment on the Issues Etc. forum. Questions and comments on the removal of Judge Roy Moore. Our guest during this hour, joining us here in Studio A, Dr. David Adams. He's Associate Professor of Old Testament at Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis. He's co-author of an article in a recent edition of the Lutheran Witness magazine titled The Judge and the Ten Commandments. Dr. Adams, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you, Todd. It's always good to be with you.
First of all, Dr. Adams, you have written that there's an awful lot that where Judge Roy Moore is right. What are those things about which he is right?
Yes, as I look at this, I'm very mixed about this case with Judge Moore. There are many things on which I find myself in agreement with him, and in the past I have defended him, even though I think in this case he's wrong. First, I certainly agree with him about the state of moral collapse, both in American society in general, and in the courts. I'm concerned, like him, about the judicial activism in the courts and by an increasing tendency in some of the more liberal courts of America to interpret the First Amendment in such a way as it would expel all religious discourse from the public square. I find that to be a very troubling tendency. I'm also in agreement with Judge Moore about the significance of the Ten Commandments and the Judeo-Christian ethical tradition and its impact on the development of American law, although I probably wouldn't go as far as Judge Moore in attributing American law virtually solely to the Bible. And finally, I would agree with Judge Moore in the need to protect freedom of religious speech in the civil arena. That's an issue that is very important for all Christians to be concerned about. And there's a real irony in that, because it's because I agree with Judge Moore about how important it is to protect the freedom of religious speech in the civic arena, that I find myself in some ways on the opposite side of Judge Moore in this time. Back in 1997, when he was first ordered to remove a plaque that he had placed in his own court when he was a lower court judge in Alabama, I was of the view that Judge Moore was right in that case. This was a small plaque which he himself had made. I thought it was defensible as an article of individual religious expression. But once you get to a 5,300-pound monument in a rotunda, of the state court building, it's a little more difficult to maintain that we're talking about personal religious expression.
So while you agree with Judge Moore on all of those issues and how he sees the situation that unfolds before us in the courts and in our culture in the United States, in a nutshell, and we'll go into greater detail, of course, in just a few moments, in a nutshell, where do you believe his actions are wrong?
Well, as I said, I think it's the right concern, but the wrong solution to the problem. And I think that Judge Moore, based on having heard many of the things, heard and read many of the things that he said, I think that he's wrong in three different ways. First, I think he's wrong legally. I think his reading of the Constitution and of the laws of the state of Alabama and the United States is simply in error. Secondly, I think he's a little oversimplistic with regard to history. And as a result, I think he's wrong on the historical argument, at least wrong in the sense of oversimplifying it. And thirdly, there are several different ways in which he's wrong theologically. And as a teacher of theology and someone who cares about what God's Word says, you know, I'm very concerned when I hear people articulate wrong theology.
Let's listen to Judge Moore himself on what he says this case is all about.
It's about whether or not we can acknowledge God as the source of our law and our liberty. That's all I've done. I've been found guilty of that very thing. I've been found guilty by a code of ethics that is established on the acknowledgement of God as its source.
Dr. Adams, your reaction to how Judge Moore views the essential of this case?
The essential question, as he articulated it in that quotation, is a freedom of religious expression issue. He sees this as a case about his individual freedom to acknowledge God. And as I said, I thought he was right on that point in 1997 when we were talking about a plaque that he himself had made, a small plaque, in his courtroom. But a 5,300-pound monument placed in the rotunda of a public building cannot reasonably be considered to be a personal religious expression. Furthermore, the court that ruled against Judge Moore last week said this in the opening statement, the opening paragraph of their finding. They said, "Indeed, we recognize that the acknowledgement of God is very much a vital part of the public and private fabric of our country." So the very court that found Judge Moore wrong in this case agreed with him on the point which he just summarized. Namely, they agreed with him that it's important that individuals have the right of religious expression in the public and in private in our country. But that's not what this case was about, according to the court. The courts had a very different view of what this case is about.
And what is that?
Well, the charges that were brought against Judge Moore, there were six of them, and they were all ethics charges related to the conduct of a judge. And I'll just read them off very, very quickly in short form. First, failing to uphold the integrity and independence of the judiciary. Secondly, failing to observe high standards of conduct so that the integrity and independence of the judiciary might be preserved. Third, failing to avoid impropriety and the appearance of impropriety. Fourth, failing to respect and comply with the law. Five, failing to conduct himself in a manner promoting public confidence in the integrity and impartiality of the judiciary. That's a very important point that I think we need to come back to at some point. And finally, sixth, failing to avoid conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice so as to bring the judicial office into disrepute. That's what the court said that this case was about. They made a very clear statement that this case was not about Judge Roy Moore's personal beliefs. It was not about the Ten Commandments. It was not about the freedom of religious expression. It was about the conduct of Judge Moore in ultimately placing himself above the law and saying, as he did in an interview with the Los Angeles Times, that he himself was the highest judicial authority, I'm sorry, the highest legal authority in the state of Alabama. No judge, no president, no congressman, no anybody is the highest legal authority in the state of Alabama or in the United States. The Constitution is the highest legal authority.
So in a nutshell, with about a minute before we have to go to this break, summarize how this unfolded. The monument was erected. It was ordered removed. With 1 minute, what occurred after that?
Well, the short version is when the monument was put in place, very shortly thereafter, the American Civil Liberties Union and several others, within just a couple of months, a court case was filed against him. It worked its way through. He was ultimately ordered to remove the statue. He refused to remove it. There was an appeal. Finally, back in January, he was ordered again to remove it. He refused again. Then finally, over the summer, it was ordered to be removed if he would not remove it. And then after that, the ethics panel charges were filed against Judge Moore, and that led ultimately to the ethics panel hearing that was resolved last week.
When we come back from this break, Judge Moore has been saying that this is also a state's rights issue, and many have been saying in his behest as well that this is a state's rights issue. That's something we'll have to take up and talk about when we come back from this break. We're talking about the removal of Judge Roy Moore on issues, etc. We'll be right back.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you to pay the production, salaries, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin asking you to prayerfully consider making a financial gift to Issues, Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You can donate by credit card, 1-800-737-0172. Or you can donate by check, Issues, Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues, Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues, Etc.
Next week on Issues, Etc., we're going to be discussing answering the questions of unbelievers with Christian apologist and law professor Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. Are the New Testament Gospels, are these documents factual or fictional or forged? And is the Gospel of Jesus Christ just another story open to different interpretations? We'll talk about all of that next week on Issues, Etc. with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. Now, if you'd like to know what we'll be discussing for the rest of November and into the month of December, check out our website, issuesetc.org. issuesetc.org. While you're there, be sure to read several, you can look at our Issues, Etc. book of the month for November. It's called Meditations on Divine Mercy. Now, this book, folks, I recommend a lot of books, but this is a book that I can recommend without qualification. It is a book of personal devotions and prayers written by a 17th century Lutheran theologian. And what makes them so pertinent for us today is they are written from the solid grounding and rooting of that Reformation. The message of sin and grace, of law and gospel, of our predicament as fallen and condemned creatures, and God's solution and answer in Jesus Christ. The book is called Meditations on Divine Mercy. It's very appropriately titled. You can order it online by going to our website, issuesetc.org. The book costs $12.99 plus shipping and handling. Or you can call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours. Their number, 1-800-325-3040. Now, when you call, make sure that you mention Issues, Etc. It's our book of the month for November, Meditations on Divine Mercy. The number again, 1-800-325-3040. We're talking about the removal of Judge Roy Moore. Dr. David Adams is our guest. Dr. Adams,
Judge Roy Moore has said that this is about states' rights. Let's hear what he has to say.
The Alabama Constitution says our justice system is established on God. That's the rule of law. When a federal judge comes in, unelected and appointed for life, and says the state of Alabama cannot acknowledge God, we have a serious problem.
All right, now he has said that the federal courts have said the state of Alabama cannot acknowledge God. There's the state's rights crux. What's your thoughts?
Right. Now, this is just simply a legal issue. Judge Moore bases this argument based on the preamble to the Alabama Constitution. There in the preamble to the Alabama Constitution, we find these words very similar to the U.S. Constitution. We, the people of the state of Alabama, in order to establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invoking the favor and guidance of Almighty God, that's the clause that Judge Moore refers to, do ordain and establish the following Constitution. And it continues on from there. Now, this is the legal point. The general rule about how courts interpret preambles is that they establish the general purpose and the intent of the Constitution. They do not in themselves provide sources of authority. And the court case that established this, U.S. Supreme Court case that established this, is Jacobson versus Massachusetts from 1905. So this is nothing new. Furthermore, first, Judge Moore is simply wrong on the issue of the power of the preamble. A second point to be recognized is that whenever there's a conflict, if there is a conflict, but wherever there's a conflict between the Constitution of the states and the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of the United States must prevail. There is a clause in the United States Constitution known as the Supremacy Clause. It's Article 6 in Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution that reads as follows. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, shall be the supreme law of the land, and judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. In other words, the U.S. Constitution says that if you have something in your state constitution or something in your state laws that violate the U.S. Constitution, then the U.S. Constitution trumps all those other things. So simply as a matter of law, and I am not a lawyer, but even I can read good old everyday English, it's pretty clear that Judge Moore cannot invoke the Alabama Constitution in order to argue against the First Amendment of the United States Constitution.
Okay, now you've brought up the First Amendment. Someone out there is certainly saying this is really all about the First Amendment, and it's about religious expression, or in the terms that Judge Moore has been putting it, acknowledging God. What does the First Amendment have to say, and how does it bear upon this case?
The First Amendment contains two clauses. The first clause says that there will be no establishment of religion, which means to say that the federal government, and then as applied by the 14th Amendment, later state governments, cannot set up an official state church, nor can, in the same context, nor can it show preferential treatment to one religious group over another. The second clause is known as the Free Exercise Clause. It's very short, nor limit the free exercise thereof. And it's that clause to which Judge Roy Moore appeals here. He says, my putting these Ten Commandments in the rotunda of the State Capitol building is simply my free exercise of religion. The problem is that no constitutional right is absolute. And we often encounter this with people in the Second Amendment with regard to firearms. You know, they want to say, you know, I can't have, why can't I have a nuclear bomb in my house? Because the Constitution says I have a right to bear arms. Well, yes, but it's not absolute. For example, the Constitution guarantees us the right of free speech. But I cannot slander you. You know, that would be breaking the law. So there are limits to every law. Every legal freedom is limited. You know, we have the right of free expression of religious belief in this country, but the laws of the United States do not let us engage in human sacrifice. So we have said that, and the constitutional principle is that when there is a compelling state interest, that compelling state interest can trump even the constitutionally protected rights.
Now, with only 2 minutes before we go to our next break, historically, this was the second category that you were looking at. Historically, what oversimplification do you think Judge Moore is engaging in here?
Judge Moore regularly says that the Constitution and the laws of the United States are based on the Bible and Christian beliefs. He is in part true, but in part he's not true, because the laws of the United States are based on more than Christian beliefs. And I'll give you one very quick example since we're coming up on a break here. Let's take one of the absolute basic things about the American legal system, namely trial by jury. The American legal system assumes and guarantees the right of trial by jury. Where did that legal principle come from? Not from the Bible, not from Jewish or Christian tradition. It actually comes from the old Celtic legal tradition that was part of the pre-Roman British tribes, you know, living in England before the Roman Empire, before Christianity ever came to Britain. And so this very fundamental part of the American legal tradition, the right of trial by jury, is not based on the Ten Commandments. It is not based on the Bible. And it's not based on Christian ethical and moral tradition. It's based on a non-Christian legal principle that we've adopted.
We're talking about the removal of Judge Roy Moore. Dr. David Adams is our guest. He formerly served as Executive Director of the Office for Government Information for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He's Associate Professor of Old Testament at Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis, and he's co-authored an article in a recent edition of the Lutheran Witness magazine titled The Judge and the Ten Commandments. You can read this article on our website. We have it posted there for your perusal, issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, click on there and you'll find The Judge and the Ten Commandments by Dr. David Adams. The website address again, issuesetc.org. Now, we do invite your contribution to this conversation as we talk about the removal of Judge Roy Moore. Our number, 1-800-730-2727. We'll be right back.
Have you grown weary of devotional books that focus more upon the Christian than upon Christ? Devotions emphasizing Christ in you more than Christ for you. Issues Etc. recommends Meditations on Divine Mercy by Johann Gerhard. It's our book of the month for November. Meditations on Divine Mercy is translated by Issues Etc. regular guest Pastor Matt Harrison. Visit our website, issuesetc.org, for more information on this book, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. That's 1-800-325-3040. The cost is $12.99 plus shipping and handling. If you've read the Prayer of Jabez, you need Meditations on Divine Mercy. 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org. Meditations on Divine Mercy, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November. That's 1-800-325-3040.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I'm Todd Wilkin. We're joined by Pastor Matt Harrison, Executive Director of LCMS World Relief and translator for our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Meditations on Divine Mercy by Johann Gerhard. Matt, who is Johann Gerhard?
Johann Gerhard was a Christian, a teacher, a thinker, a theologian, a Lutheran theologian of the 17th century, the early 17th century. And behind Martin Luther, a lot of people say he is behind Luther and Martin Chemnitz, the third, after which there is no fourth. He was so significant in Protestantism in Europe in the 17th century.
So how can the writings of an early 17th century theologian be relevant today?
I think, you know, in this case, they're extremely relevant precisely because they're not from our time. You know as well as I do, Todd, that there is a rush for relevance everywhere today, and in that rush, the result is most often, quite often, a real triteness, a transitoriness of materials today, the latest fad. And I think the brilliance of the older writings is they pull us to really fundamentally important truths of the Christian faith that have been universally true since Christ himself.
So what's wrong with much of devotional material today?
I think there's a lot of good devotional material today. On the other hand, a lot of devotional material today is geared more toward making me feel good about myself and feel good about others, instead of really digging deeper to the fundamental bases of the Christian faith, dealing in a really serious way with sin and my own carnal desires, dealing in a serious way with God's remedy and giving us the gospel full force. And I think that's what this great devotional work does.
You can order Meditations on Divine Mercy by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or visit our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section, and you'll find information on the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Meditations on Divine Mercy. When you call or write, mention Issues Etc., the book, Meditations on Divine Mercy, 1-800-325-3040, issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. You know, I'm looking forward to meeting some of our Issues Etc. listeners in Western Missouri next Sunday, November the 23rd. I'll be at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Carrollton there. I'll be leading Bible class Sunday morning at 9 o'clock, preaching at 10 o'clock for the worship service there. Now, Emmanuel Lutheran Church is located at 402 South Folger Street in Carrollton, Missouri. That's out in western Missouri. Carrollton, Missouri, 402 South Folger Street there in Carrollton. So stop by and visit us next Sunday at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Carrollton. We're talking about the removal of Judge Roy Moore. Dr. David Adams is our guest. Dr. Adams, on the theological front, the third category you wanted to address in this issue, you say there are several points of concern for you in Judge Roy Moore's actions and thinking.
There are. I'm anxious to get to some phone calls, so I just want to touch on two things very quickly. The first is the point that Judge Moore raises time and time again, that his obligation to witness to Christ, to bear witness to God, compels him to do what he has done. This raises an important question for Christians to understand how they live their vocation as Christians in the world. And it's Judge Moore's right that we are compelled by the love of God to want to share Christ with people. At the same time, we have to recognize that in our various vocations, that does not mean that we do this with every sentence and every word that we speak. While we should always be witnessing to Christ by our deeds and by our actions, we have obligations also in the kingdom of the left hand to obey the government. And in some cases, when we can do that without compromising what God's word commands us to do, then we are obligated to follow the government rather than our own inclinations at any given moment.
Now, you drew a distinction there that you need to explain in mm-hmm. a little more detail. You said left hand, the kingdom of the left hand.
Yes.
This is rooted in the Reformation teaching, the scriptural teaching, of two kingdoms or two governments. Tell us about that.
Well, again, I'll just pick out a couple of things from the scripture very quickly. Let's begin with the Gospel of John, a passage that everyone knows in John 18:36, when addressing not this issue, but an issue of government power, Jesus says, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered to the Jews, but my kingdom is not of this world." So those who want to argue that America is a Christian nation unfortunately seem to be disagreeing with Jesus himself, who says that neither America nor any nation in this world is his kingdom. Rather, his kingdom transcends every nation. First, Jesus, the kingdom of God, is not coextensive with America or any other nation. And secondly, in a number of places in the scripture, Romans 13 and others, God commands Christians to obey the law, to obey the civil authority, because the civil authority is also God's servant, as Paul says in Romans, that the civil authority is God's servant to accomplish good, to punish the to punish those who do evil and protect those who do good. So God, the scripture teaches, works in two ways. God sets up civil authority, even in those nations which do not, in the Old Testament, which were Gentile nations, their governments were still fundamentally given by God. The same way, our government and the government of every nation in the world today is fundamentally given by God to protect all creation, all of the human beings, from the worst rampages of sin. That's different from God's kingdom, which works by grace through the Word of God and through the sacraments to produce not civil order, but the forgiveness of sins.
Now, by way of summary, then, your two concerns, your two theological concerns, mm-hmm. seem to be related. One, is the judge being required to violate his a biblical mandate to witness? The answer is no. Second, he is failing to distinguish between how God rules in the civil realm as opposed to in the church. He's blurring those a little bit. So if he were to say, I must obey God rather than men, theologically, he is really not connecting the dots to make that case.
That's correct. He says, that they're asking me to deny God. Well, no one has asked Judge Moore to deny God. No one has asked Judge Moore to deny the Ten Commandments or break the Ten Commandments. They've simply said that he can't display them so prominently in the state judicial building. This would be rather like this kind of question. Let's say I'm a policeman and a Christian. Every time I stop somebody for a traffic violation, do I have to witness to them before I can give them a traffic ticket? I think every Christian would probably recognize that one does not have to witness to Christ with every sentence one says in order to do one's job in the world. But that's what Judge Moore's claiming.
Let's go to the phones, 1-800-730-2727. You'll be getting a busy signal, but we'll be freeing up some lines as we take our first call. Melody is on the line from Mojave, California. She's listening on XM Radio. Melody, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
I've been listening to this for months, and I really get aggravated. They want to take God out of our Pledge of Allegiance and the Ten Commandments over one person saying they don't like it. Okay, we have all these people that go down to Alabama when they were trying to take the Ten Commandments away to stand up for their, what they considered their rights and what they thought, God is what it's about. There's people that don't agree with that. I understand that. But it's like they're saying that we cannot have, the ones that do believe, can't put a monument that is that great and means that much to other people because one person doesn't like it, or they don't believe in God, or they don't have any religious beliefs. To me, that's taken away from our rights as citizens that are Christians, that to be able to put something in a place that people can see. I don't agree with the people that don't believe in God, but I'm not taking out things against them. So, I don't understand.
Melody, thank you very much for the call. Okay, the basic scenario she laid out, the majority of people and then a large number of people say, we want that monument up, and maybe just one person doesn't. Why doesn't democracy rule in this case?
Well, democracy does, in fact, rule in this case. What democracy, the way in which democracy rules is through the principles that the majority of the people in the country stand for. Law serves in part to protect the minority from the majority, to protect the weak from the strong. So, a mob of people simply can't get together and say, we want a certain kind of thing to happen in society, and because there's a mob of us, we're going to force our will upon the others. Law works by establishing the boundaries and then says to all the people in society, you cannot cross over those boundaries. So until the majority changes the law, then the majority has to live by the law, as well as the minority having to live by the law. Anything else would simply be a form of mob rule. I'm sorry Melody wasn't still on the line with us. I was going to ask her, she lives in Mojave, California, if she had moved to Utah, say, where the majority of people are Mormon, and her child went to a school there, and let's say the Mormon majority in Utah wanted to require the recognition of the Mormon faith in public schools, so that her child was going to be forced to learn and study Mormon doctrine and to acknowledge it as part of her everyday schooling. I didn't have a chance to ask Melody, but I'm going to work on the assumption that she would, if she's a Christian, she would resent her child being forced to learn and even to practice Mormonism in school. So you can't just say because the majority of the people in Utah are Mormon, they have a right to impose their faith on the minority. That's what the Constitution protects.
Someone says, well, no one's trying to impose any faith. We just want a simple kind of basic acknowledgement of a God. How do you respond?
I would certainly agree completely that the First Amendment allows for the public recognition of God. And I would point out that the judicial panel that ruled against Judge Moore said the same thing. We quoted it a moment ago. They said, we recognize the acknowledgement of God is very much a vital part of the public and private fabric of our country. They aren't trying to take that away. They believe in that. They're willing to protect that. And we are too. The problem is, Judge Moore is as he himself has said on a number of occasions, he's trying to reclaim the country for God. That's a different issue than just expressing my own personal faith in God in the public square.
Let's take a real quick call before this break and get the answer on the other side. Scott is calling from St. Louis, listening on KSIV. Scott, welcome to Issues Etc. Our time is short.
Oh, sure. Just real quickly, I think, you know, at a real cursory glance, even when suggests that one should not display commandments is already imposing a moral standard. And also, I would agree that this is not a theonomous culture. However, I think that even philosophically, they adhere to a natural law. And I think even riddled throughout our country, as early as 1796, there was even a promulgation, I think, of at least a theistic worldview, if not inherently Christian, which I would agree that, yeah, this is not a Christian nation. But any view that's going to suggest that one should not do something because, you know, of the reference point of the Constitution is already imposing a standard. And I think once that standard of reference is analyzed, you'll see that they are alluding to what they may deny, and that is an objective point of reference for morality.
Scott, thank you very much. We appreciate that. He's given us a lot to chew on the other side of the break. Now, folks, if you'd like to receive a free tape of this two-hour broadcast with Dr. David Adams on the removal of Judge Roy Moore, contact the local church sponsor for Issues Etc. in your area. They'll send you a free cassette recording. Get a pen and a piece of paper ready because you should hear an announcement with a phone number and a mailing address for that sponsor right after the Issues Etc. close theme. When we come back, we'll answer Scott's question. Saying you cannot post the commandments, is that in itself also a kind of imposition of a view? And what about an objective point of reference for all law? Is that all that Judge Moore is talking about? We'll answer that question and take others on the other side of this break. 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. Stay with us.
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you know God's will for your daily life? Is God's will a mystery? Do we need to look for a sign from God to know what to do at any given moment? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. I've written an article in the latest edition of the Issues Etc. Journal titled Locus and Focus, God's Will for Your Daily Life. The recent issue also contains a review of Armageddon, the latest in the Left Behind series, and Aaron Wolf details his spiritual journey to the Reformation from the legalism of evangelicalism. His article is titled A Beggar on the Wittenberg Trail. Plus, you'll find a list of tape and book resources. You can receive the next edition of the Issues Etc. Journal by calling our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172, or write Issues Etc. Journal, Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. A little something that I have observed here, and that is, especially when it comes to an issue like this that tends to drag on for several years, stay in the press, stay in front of our attention, attract a lot of attention from the media, the Judge Roy Moore case. Both sides in this argument, an element on both sides of this argument, have one goal, and it's actually a common goal, and that is to get you and me not to really think about this issue. On the left, they say, well, all Christians are kind of wacky fundamentalists who want to impose their beliefs on the rest of us by force of law. That's not really a position so much as it is simply a way of labeling the other side so that you don't have to think about it. On the right, they're saying they just want to take away all of our religious freedoms. There's no real thought required there either. Now, I am aware that you don't agree with everything you hear on Issues, etc. That's good. We don't want Christian ditto heads. We don't want evangelical cheerleaders. We want you to think, and think critically. Please consider supporting Talk Radio for the Thinking Christian, Issues, etc., by becoming a monthly contributor or by making a year-end tax-deductible gift. To find out how you can become an Issues, etc. apologist, confessor, or reformer, go to our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section you'll find there, or you can see page 8 of the latest Issues, Etc. journal. You can also support this worldwide outreach by check. We have an address, Issues, Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. You can also donate by credit card, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172, or you can always donate online at our website, issuesetc.org. Dr. Adams, before the break, Scott was on the line. He asks two questions. The refusal to allow the monument for the commandments to be in the rotunda may not be neutral itself either. It may also be an imposition of sorts. Your response?
Yes, I think the word that Scott used was, the phrase that he used, at least that what I jotted down, was imposing a moral standard. And he's right in that. It is imposing a moral standard. And the standard is this, that the state is going to be neutral with respect to religion and protect the religious freedom of everyone. And that especially means the religious freedom of the minority, because by definition, the religious freedom of the majority doesn't have to be protected because it's already held by most people. So the moral standard that's being imposed here is the protection of religious freedom. So that when a person comes into a court of law in America, they have a right to believe that they're going to be judged based on the law, that they're not going to be given any special treatment, or they're not going to be found guilty of something because of their religious views. I don't think I would like it if I were a Christian and I were charged with some crime and I was brought before a judge and the judge was openly Islamic. You know, that he was wearing Islamic clothing and wanted me to swear on a Quran instead of on a Bible, and said, I'm going to, do my job here based on my beliefs in the God of the Quran. So I think I would be a little disturbed about that if I were a Christian. In the same way, I think we Christians, who are a majority in the country, have to recognize that Muslims would be in the same way disturbed by coming into a court and seeing they were going to be judged on the basis of a different religious standard. So the position which the state upholds is a position of neutrality, that the laws of the country are going to be maintained, and they're going to be judged on the basis of the laws, not on the basis of any individual's religious beliefs.
Scott also had this to say, in essence, historically, of course, we're not a Christian nation, but we do have a theistic worldview underpinning our nation, and therefore, Judge Roy Moore is right. Your response?
Well, I would agree with Scott, and there's a tremendous irony here that, if I remember correctly, on the front of the 5,300-pound monument, you know, with the Ten Commandments on it, was a phrase from Thomas Jefferson, this famous phrase, nature and nature's God. The tremendous irony, of course, there is that Jefferson rejected the God of the Bible. He consciously taught and believed in a different God from the God whom the Bible reveals. And to put Jefferson's quote on the front of the Ten Commandments is an offense to the very God that Judge Moore would like to honor by that monument. So there's a real irony there. Just because America has a theistic tradition doesn't mean it's the God of the Bible that's being honored. And Christians often make this mistake. Whenever we hear someone say God, we think they're talking about the same God that we mean, like in God we trust. There's no guarantee that God is the God who became man in Jesus Christ.
Ted is calling from Minneapolis, listening on KKMS. Ted, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Well, thank you very much. I have a question regarding the Ten Commandments on the Supreme Court building. I understand that they are put on the walls. I'm not sure where they're located. And if that's the case, and my understanding was our founding fathers were very educated, and they allowed that to be put on the Supreme Court, and it's also used, for example, on when people swear in, so help me God, on the Bible, why then has that changed, and when has that changed?
It's an excellent question, Ted. Dr. Adams, tell us about the Supreme Court building and the Ten Commandments as they are depicted there.
Yeah, thank you for your call, Ted. I've been in the Supreme Court building a number of times. I sat and listened to oral arguments. I had breakfast there fairly regularly when I lived in Washington because, actually, to be honest, the Supreme Court is a good place to have breakfast if you're downtown in D.C. It's cheap, and you might end up sitting next to a Supreme Court judge, and you can ask him these questions yourself. It's one of the little hidden things in Washington that most people don't know about. Breakfast at the Supreme Court. There are several representations of the Ten Commandments in the Supreme Court chamber. In the chamber itself, there are two. One, if you're facing the justices, is up on the right-hand side. There's an image of Moses holding two tablets of stone, and you can just see the words in Hebrew. I teach Hebrew, so I recognize them. Lo tirzach, you shall not kill. That's the only part of the Ten Commandments that you can actually see the words of in its entirety. You can see part of the word lo, meaning not, a couple of times. And then above the place where the Chief Justice sits, there's a kind of outline image of, at the woods is way up above where the judge sits, an outline image of the two tablets of the law, but there are no words on them. It's just two, you know, the kind of two-tablet sort of image. But the thing to know about the Supreme Court chamber is that along with those representations of the Ten Commandments, there are all around the court images of other law givers. There's Solon, the Greek law giver. There's Hammurabi, the king who received, according to Babylonian tradition, the law from the gods. And there are others as well. So in the Supreme Court chamber, the recognition is that the American legal system has come from many sources, of which the Bible is just one of them. And that kind of gets back to the point I was making earlier in the program about the historical simplification which Judge Moore sometimes makes.
Folks, we will be continuing to take your phone calls on this subject, the removal of Judge Roy Moore and all that goes along with it, live in the next hour at 1-800-730-2727. We'll let you stay on the line to hear the response to your question or your comment, 1-800-730-2727. Now, if you're getting a busy signal, please keep trying, because right on the other side of this break, we will be freeing up phone lines in the next hour. You can also post your question or comment on our Issues Etc. forum, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You'll find the forum there. Now, you won't be able to listen to this next hour on the radio. It's only on the Internet. Go to our website where you can listen, issuesetc.org. Click on the worldwide KFUO logo, and you'll be able to listen to the next hour live. Issuesetc.org. We are coming to you live this Sunday evening, November the 16th. Give us a call during this break. Keep trying if you're getting a busy signal, or go to our forum at issuesetc.org. 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. One thing that we must bear in mind here is adherence to the law. If the Ten Commandments say, among other things, honor your father and mother, that includes temporal authorities as well. Can we violate the Ten Commandments in order to honor the Ten Commandments and the God who gave us those Ten Commandments? Do we honor that God and the commands that he has given if we are adamantly refusing to obey the laws of the land, when there are other avenues open to us to get recourse for our grievances? What does it really mean to acknowledge God? It means to acknowledge him having come in the flesh, Jesus Christ. You won't find that in the Ten Commandments. Those are the commands that he kept for you and for me. We who break these commandments, who are held under the condemnation of these commandments, Jesus Christ, God in the flesh, was perfectly obedient to those commandments for you and for me all the way to the cross. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen to Pastor Todd Wilkin weekly on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172. Visit us this week on the World Wide Web. Our website address, issuesetc.org. issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.